For those of you that have joined us late with a befuddled expression, I've switched around the order of the program, Dr. Lotz is next. Dr. Prokrajec could not join us today, so his presentation will be pre-recorded. But I'm pleased to welcome Dr. Rainer Lotz to the session this afternoon. Dr. Lotz is a German discographer, musicologist, and jazz historian. He's an avid record collector and has authored numerous publications on historical recordings and on jazz and black musicians in Europe. And he is the editor of the multi-volume German National Discography. It was published by his press, Birgit Lotz Verlag, which has published numerous other books on discography as well. He is the 1998 winner of the ARSC Lifetime Achievement Award. And today he will be talking about his new publication, the German 78 RPM record label book. Please give a warm welcome to Dr. Rainer Lotz.
Thank you for the warm welcome. I'm sure I have spoken before larger audiences, but I'm sure never before such exquisite an audience. Attendance is dwindling because we have strong competition from the parallel session next door. Also, this is an esoteric subject, and there is no music. It's just a slideshow. Those who know me know that I am always working on two or three publications at the same time, and this gives me an excuse to plug the latest thing about which I talked the last time in, Los Angeles, Black Europe. And David will pass around the flyers if you haven't picked them up from the exhibitors room. I urge you, if you haven't done so, to write to the email address which is mentioned there, which means that the producer will update you on progress, schedules, etc., and the prices which have not yet been decided upon. But in any case, they need to be motivated to push forward with that project, which had already been postponed a year or so. Those who did not listen to my last presentation, this is about the presence of people of African descent, mainly African Americans, in Europe, not just in Germany, in Europe. And we document all the sound documents, all the film documents, and this will be, in addition to a huge book, issued on 40 CDs. Now, one of my present other research projects is the German label book. There have been several attempts in the past to do this for various countries, nobody ever took up the challenge to document the German labels, because that again is something for a big man like me. It's a huge task, because Germany was the cradle of the recording industry, more or less. And there were a great number of recording companies, a great number of labels. And I tried to include everything under the generic names of 78 RPM. Some of you are aware of the fact that I published a book before that was about 35 years ago. This is, to the best of my knowledge, the first attempt of putting out something in with full color reproductions of labels. And it still is, to this day, the only book to discuss the iconography, the design and the meaning and the iconography of labels. It is in German language, so there is a chance for you, if you find a secondhand copy, it has long been sold out, to practice your German. Now, what I will do today is give a brief overview of the scope of the project, which is tremendous. I'm not sure, Kurt, what your latest count is of record labels in your updated discography. It was more than 1,000 last time.
It'll probably be around 12 or 13.
Right. So we will probably talk about minimum of 5,000 labels. And I have not talked to any publishers yet because they will kick me out of the door. We will have to find some way of doing this after all. Now, I will discuss also why the scope of the project is so enormous, because we will not just cover, I talk about that later. First of all, I give you some examples of what has been done before by other people. We have publications. I think the first was Michael Weiler, who did that a long time ago. The illustrations were all in black and white. Also the others, Brian Russ's book and Don Taylor book had mostly black and white illustrations. There were those two magnificent calendars for 2003 and 2005, published in France and printed in Czechoslovakia with a worldwide coverage. There are others. I just show you Russia, Czechoslovakia, and another book published in the Netherlands on European record labels. All of those books should be still available. And then, of course, there is the best book published so far, the Nauck and Sutton work. And there are many books specializing on special aspects, like a picture disc, for instance. But there are very few 78 RPM picture discs, so the books cover this only as a sideline. Now, why do we have such a large scope? First of all, naturally, we go from A to Z. All record labels are being covered by Alphabet. Secondly, we cover the entire era of 78 RPM labels. From the earliest times to the left, you see a disc which was pressed in Germany for export to the United Kingdom. On the right, you find a disc which was pressed in Germany for export to Bahrain. I'm not sure this disc was ever pressed. I've never found if physical specimen. I found this label in the estate of the late Telefunken company in Germany. So this is another aspect. We will cover all 78 RPM picture discs. And unfortunately, the Nazi Party in Germany were the first really to discover the publicity aspects of gramophone records, and they were the first to publish great numbers, really astonishing, of picture disc promoting speeches and military marches, etc. Uncult things, but they are records and they have a historical meaning, so they will be included. Also, we shall include all phono postcards, and what few people realize is that the phono postcards go back almost to the beginning of the phonographic industry, the earliest date from 1903. And each of them, naturally, has a different design, a different picture, a different image. And therefore, all of these will also be included in our project. When I say our project, that means about one third of the labels are from my own collection. Another third is from the collection of a friend in France, Michael Gunrem, and the final third is retrieved from collectors around the world, because many of the labels are one of a kind and extremely difficult to find. We will also include those acetate discs and self-recording discs. To the left, you find an example which is made of metal. To the right, you will find an example which is gelatin-based. Then we have some very strange creatures like this one, and I'm not sure I should include it, because it was certainly recorded in Germany, it was mastered in Germany, but I'm not sure they were actually pressed in Germany. They may have been imported from Japan. It's difficult to find out. This is a very last thing, and it's not exactly 78 RPM, but it is normal groove. And where do we draw the line? And this is a very strange thing. The Deadly Doris was a rock group in Germany, and they choose this strange format, which only allows a few seconds, really, of music per disc side. You see another example of this type of record to the right, the smallest discs, which were made for speaking dolls, and on the other side, for comparison, about the largest disc we produced in Germany, 16-inch, 40-centimeter diameter, and they are discs used for synchronized early sound films in the late 1920s and early 1930s, before we had soundtracks attached to the film itself. A real problem era, what we could call, for a lack of a better use of the word, a better description, the phantom labels. What I did is screen and thumb through all the copyright entries, and many companies entered copyrights for pictures and images or names for records. And record labels were submitted to the patent office. And many of those have never been located, have never been seen. And the Mendelssohn is just one such example. We can't know for sure that it was never issued, simply because we haven't found it yet. But this is an unlikely candidate, for the simple reason that if it were realized, the center hole would go right through the nose of poor Mendelssohn, and the appearance of the disc would be ruined. And there are very few examples of that center hole being incorporated in the label design. And what I, as a contrast, put on the right-hand side is one of the most genial designs ever, where the hole is an integral part of the record design, because the parrot sits on the perch, and other record designs would have to have a bar across the label, which goes right over the center hole, and then you have the upper half circle segment and the lower half circle segment to bear the information about the record. Now, another phantom label would be Trapper. I've selected this because you are familiar with the word Trapper. And this trademark was entered by a vending machine factory in the city of Leipzig in 1909. And he specifically said that he wanted this name protected for the business line of gramophone records. No such gramophone records have been found to date. And another example is Kaiser Record, the Emperor Record. And this one is also unlikely to have been implemented in the shape it is being copyrighted, because, as you will notice, the center hole is much too small. It would have been an early LP. But again, this record probably was never realized. Now, here we have another phantom label, which I found in the trademark registers, Chap Bintang Sapu and Pendapatan Batu. And this sounds all very strange, and it is. And obviously, it was entered by an exporter, an export trader in Europe. And nobody had ever seen a copy. Nobody had ever seen a copy until, on one of my travels to Sumatra, I went to a junk shop and found the creature you see to the left. And it was covered with mud. It was very dirty. And I foolishly took it to the hotel and gave it a thorough wash. And what little was left of the inscription went down the sink. And we then tried, and this is a question of the ethics of a restorer. Is it allowable to artificially recreate such a label. A friend of mine tried to do it, and he did the thing that you see on the right-hand side. We deducted the colors, and we took the trademark applications, and then made a new label, which never existed in that form. And lo and behold, not soon after, a collector in the Netherlands contacted me, and he had real copies that hadn't been seen for the last 100 years. They must have been somewhere. And not only that, he had more than one color version of that label. So talking about phantom labels is one thing. Talking about hearsay labels is another thing. So there are some cases where we can be reasonably sure that a label has existed because somebody referred to it some way or other. And I'm not sure whether any of you has ever seen a Lily of the Valley record. It had been referred to in an Australian newspaper, which I have never seen, but a trustworthy person told me so. And I went to the National Archive in Australia myself. I contacted all the collectors and visited them in Australia and New Zealand. Nobody had ever seen a copy. I told my audience so at the 2006 conference in Mexico City, and on my return to Germany, I found an email waiting for me, and here is Lily of the Valley. The story behind that is that it has been traced in a local history museum in Brisbane, in the state of Queensland, and actually in four different color variations. And in our book, of course, all four variations will be reproduced. Further research led me to the conclusion that the discs were pressed by the Homocord company in Germany, and to be sold exclusively by the McWhirter department store, long gone, I suppose, in the Brisbane suburb called Fortitude Valley. And Fortitude was the name of the ship which brought the first free settlers in the then Moreton Bay Panel Colony. So this was just one shop in one part of Brisbane 100 years ago, and no wonder it was never on sale in Germany, and nobody has ever seen a copy until, luckily, those copies were found in a local history museum in that city. And this picture raises another ethical question. In order to present the iconography properly, we should remove the license sticker, which obscures part of the label. On the other hand, the license stickers in Germany and in other European countries were required by law, so you find them somewhere on the label until they were printed into the label design itself as such. But in the early days, you had to use a stamp, and some of the copyright owners, actually even composers, signed each single record with a pen themselves. So some of those are really autographs besides being pieces of music and shellac artifacts. Now, when I started the project, I removed those stickers, and then I decided to leave them on. But my question to you is, help me, because I'm not sure, but I think I stick to a label like the one you see now. Yes, so far for the hearsay labels. Now we have entirely different creatures, what we call paste-over labels. In the early days of the recording industry, many record companies in Germany would provide blank records, and anyone could put their own name on them. So a lot of companies could not afford to record their own music, but they would obtain records from a pressing plant, anonymous records, and then paste over their own label. And the record companies foresaw this and designed records which had an outer rim on which such labels could be pasted. And there, of course, nobody knows how many such labels existed. New ones pop up every day, maybe not as many as post-war labels in Texas, but here you see one example, at least the only one I have found so far, which starts with an X, xylophone record. And now to conclude my little presentation, I will present you with some record labels which are of interest as what I could call Americana. You will see the American Eagle or the American flag or both as part of the record design. And some of them are of very unclear provenance. If any one of you in the audience know, have seen this, have details, background details on a label like this, please let me know. They have a German look to them, but the matrix numbers and other details don't give them away easily. Including the spelling America with a K, which of course is the German spelling. Here you have another one. Now American is spelled with a C, but this may have been called American Record because it was recorded in Istanbul by an American sound engineer in the employ of the Lindstrom company. Or that is what we assume right now. We are not yet sure. Strikingly beautiful labels they are, but I'm unsure whether I should, could, and would include them. Here's another one, unclear provenance. I think they are manufactured by the Calliope Music Works in Leipzig, who were otherwise known as manufacturers of mechanical musical instruments. And I have not found the equivalent German issue, then it would be easy. But all indicators point to the Calliope Music Works as the culprit. The next problem, of course, is that we want to include capsule histories for each record label, and they put me to the test because there's really nothing I can say about them except a number of question marks. Here's another one where we know for sure that it was made by the Homophone company, by the Lindstrom company, who at some time in 1910 bought Homophone and Favorite, two independent companies, which then became part of the Lindstrom empire. And in order to make sure, it also says Producto Alemán, but it is clear from the imprints in the Vox and the matrix number, the provenance is from reused or recycled masters from those two companies. Here's another interesting one, a very short-lived label, and you will see at the bottom part, made in Germany from American masters. So this obscure company, which existed for a short period in time in the post-war period, post-World War I period, and they had relations with some American labels. They had an exchange of masters, apparently, and those we have traced so far were Emerson, Banner, and Regal. And our book will include anything manufactured in Germany, even if it were for export, and that's why you will find a lot of records which were never on sale in Germany, although this one specifically was. This one here, we have no information about whatsoever, an American Polydor. Polydor, of course, is a very well-known label. Also, the design is very well-known. After the lost First World War, Germany, for a while, lost its right to use the Nipper trademark, you know, the dog with the outside horn. And but the trademark could be used within Germany. Now the company, the Gramophone company who owned it, wanted to export again, and since they were not allowed to use the Nipper label, the same record with the same catalog and site numbers were issued on the Polydor label. Why for America, the United States, there was a special American Polydor escapes me. I have found no explanation for that. And then there are some paste over labels, in this case also American record, owned by a company in Leipzig, but they used the masters produced by the Clausophone company, which itself was a very small company in the heart of Germany, but not in one of the big cities. Here you have, I included this tongue-in-cheek, you have an Lebanese pianist playing the Charleston. And it's quite a good record, actually. And here you have something, an album to promote the Hamburg-America shipping line, the line which started by carrying emigrants, but during the 1920s and 1930s, specialized on regular passenger service, high class, and they issued this album with studio scenes of sketches from aboard the ship and arrival in the United States, etc. Quite interesting. And here, this is one of the most strikingly beautiful labels I've ever seen, Calliope American Record, also by a small company in Germany. And here you have Union Record, again with the American Eagle and the cross flags. And here another very rare record, actually, also using American masters, a label which is almost impossible to be found today. Well, to end my talk, I should remind you that record labels or collecting record 78s is a very cheap hobby, really it is. And if you compare our collecting habits, say, with what the book collectors would have to dish out, the Gutenberg Bible was the first printed book. 21 copies exist, are known to exist, complete copies. The last one up for auction fetched in 1978, that is a long time ago, more than $5 million. And auctioneers estimate if another copy would hit the market, it would be far beyond $100 million. Now, some of the records I have shown today are single known copies. Some are unknown copies. I mean, hearsay and phantom disc. And if they turn up, you can get them for a very few dollars. So my conclusion, with a big thank you to you, is that we are we are pursuing a hobby which can be afforded, and it has tactile and also visual aspects to it that shouldn't be underestimated. And with apologies to the ladies in the room, I now put on this. They are not 78s, but still beautiful discs. Thank you.
Thank you. If we have just maybe a couple of questions and then people can pigeonhole Reiner afterwards. We have the recorded presentation, and I'm not 100% certain how long it's going to go, but we only have about 15, 18 minutes left. But Tim, did you have a question?
Reiner, I'd be interested in your definition of a record label. Is it literally anything that's in the center of a record, even a one-off, somebody that's relatives, or does it have to have some sort of public distribution?
No, also single run things, advertising disc of all sorts, anything that is on record and could be identified as something similar or to be a 78 will be included. Even if it does not have a label, such as early Berliners, it will still be included.
Kurt?
When you publish this, is it going to be on CD-ROM, or are you going to try and actually print the label?
We did not dare think about this, and once we are settled, and I'm now with the text up to the letter F for Favorite, so it will take me another couple of years maybe to complete the text. And then we know how big the book would be without labels, and then the next step would be to decide whether it could be affordable to print it somehow as a book or put it out on CD. So the financial calculations have not yet been made, and I will definitely not put it out myself. So I have to look out for some stupid publisher to accept this.
One more question.
Yeah. It depends on how we define our potential audience and buyers. And many would be record collectors. And very few of them accept technologies that go beyond cranking a gramophone.
Thank you very much.